The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. This is like Christmas weekend for me. I have been giddy all week about football starting Saturday, Indiana football.
Yeah.
It's just one of these excitements, you know, where you can't sleep real good. You get up, you wake up, you're fired up.
Are you camping out Friday night at the stadium
for
Saturday?
No. The RV will be out there Friday night.
Yeah.
We have dinner plans Friday night. And then Saturday, of course, the game. And then Saturday night, we're going to actually go out, stay at our lake place, Lake Lemon. Sunday afternoon, I have a youth football game at 1:15 at South. Friends over doing the lake thing, pontooning and
yep.
jet skiing or whatever on Sunday afternoon. Got a nice smoked pork and green bean and all kinds of stuff going to cook in the afternoon late for dinner. Staying again out there, I'm assuming. Then Monday, another group of friends are coming out for the day.
Very nice.
It'll be a great weekend. So I'm just really excited about it. And, yeah, I'm just excited that Labor Day weekend is here and Indiana football is starting, and we have more to be excited about than we've had to be excited about maybe ever. So that's why I'm so happy.
There's a lot
and the weather's just fall-like. It feels good.
Yep. Yep.
I'm loving it. Loving it, loving it, loving it.
I saw something this week on Facebook that said the weather dropped from 90 to 65 like Mother Nature saw a state trooper.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's do a little news of the week. It's today's Q&A show. That's why you hear Jim Inman Jr.'s voice. He is here to help me along as he put a lot of questions together, and we appreciate everyone who have participated in asking questions. We did a big presentation on Wednesday night. We're doing another one tonight on Thursday night mm-hmm. on the big, beautiful tax bill. And it went over really well.
Yes, it did.
You know, it wasn't overly complicated. Talked about all the topics, had fun, made fun of each other, mm-hmm. of the people. It was a very friendly audience. Doing it again tonight on this Thursday night. So anyway, I think it went well enough that we may roll it out to the public. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Maybe an Ivy Tech type of class or something. But Jim and I will talk off. Sidebar on that, but we need to give a shout-out, of course, to Lance Like and the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300, and Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning the sale of your estate or real estate. Great way to sell your real estate. If you have a farm or different tracts of land, it's pretty cool. They do one big price and then break it all up and get you the very best price. Go to KennyBlandAuctions.com. All right, Jimmy, what do you have for news over there?
Well, on Thursday, Reuters reported that the U.S. economy grew faster than initially thought in the second quarter of the year. That's in part driven by business investment in intellectual property, such as that wonderful new term in the world, artificial intelligence. But tariffs on imports continue to cloud the outlook. Upgrade to gross domestic product reported by the Commerce Department on Thursday also reflected upward revisions to consumer spending as well as business investment in equipment. That meant a measure of underlying domestic demand also being revised higher. And with the Fed focused on softening labor market, economists expect the U.S. Central Bank to resume cutting interest rates next month. GDP increased at a 3.3 rate, according to the Commerce Department, in its second estimate, and the economy was initially reported to have grown at a 3% rate in the second quarter, but it actually was raised up a little bit to 3.1. Big news out of Washington, though, is Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook has filed suit against President Trump, seeking to block his move to fire her from the central bank. Lawsuit was filed in D.C. Federal District Court, alleging the president violated the law by attempting to remove her from her post without a valid reason. Tuesday this week, Trump said he was prepared for the legal fight and quoted, "We need people who are 100% above board, and it doesn't seem like she was." This is all concerning to the big picture of things, according to the Wall Street Journal, because since taking office, Trump has repeatedly taken aim at federal laws protecting a range of government officials from arbitrary dismissal, firing without cause, Democratic appointees serving fixed terms to supervise agencies that oversee consumer safety, labor organizing, fair trade practices, and the integrity of the civil service, among others. That includes also the dismissal of the head of the CDC, who was brought into her position less than a month ago. And finally, what's your thoughts on Uncle Herschel, the man from Cracker Barrel?
I like Uncle Herschel. Apparently, what's wrong with Uncle Herschel?
Nothing at all, apparently, to social media and all the fans of
Cracker
Barrel.
Gives you a warm feel, right?
It does. And
I like Cracker Barrel. I like the wood. I like the fireplace. I like the hash brown casserole.
Yep.
I like the ham, the salty ham. I love everything about a Cracker
Barrel. If you have
the country store.
If you've been in a cave for the last week, Cracker Barrel announced last week that they were going to change up their logo. Very bland, in my opinion, very basic, taking away the older gentleman and the Cracker Barrel on the logo. Social media went nuts. They had more than $100,000 of a stock value drop at the end of last week. And finally, they reversed course on Wednesday and announced that they would be bringing back Uncle Herschel and the original logo. Remains to be seen if they're going to fix the paint color and if they're going to bring the antiques back into the restaurants as well, because that's what customers have basically said. They want the look. They want the atmosphere. Just fix the food. That's their argument.
Oh,
and that's
so
what Cracker Barrel didn't do.
In all fairness, I've not been to Cracker Barrel probably in
a bit,
2 or 3 years maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, but you know, breakfast pretty good. The belt stretcher, is that there? I don't even
I think
know.
That's,
or the
yeah.
the meat? I don't
something
know.
Something like that.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah. And just those who follow us on Facebook, last week we put up a version of our logo decked out like
I saw it
and like Cracker Barrel. No, that is not going to be the change or anything. We were just jumping on the bandwagon like everybody else, but it got some traffic and it got some feedback. So thank you all very much.
Awesome. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to have the question and answer show. And if you hear a question and you need some more elaboration, always reach out to us at cfci.us. Just contact us. The question or the follow-up will eventually circulate back to me, and we'll get a hold of you and make it happen. I need to, so real quick before I go, you were talking about Trump and everything. So we, so I had a call with Senator Young on
Friday.
Yeah, so I'm at Wrigley Field. It's kind of funny. I'm on a Zoom call with him, and of course I ask him about daylight savings time. So everyone knows that listens to the show. That was my number one concern. And were you in the room?
I was not.
Okay.
No,
so,
I could hear parts of it, but not.
Okay. So we, you know, had our pleasantries. How you doing? How's Jenny? How's the kids? How's this? How's that? And it was great. And then I'm like, all right, well, I've got a couple of things to talk about. One is daylight savings time. Dude, we got to get rid of it. I said, it messes with me, messes with people's kids when trying to get them to bed. It messes with our dogs. You know, the dogs don't know
no,
that
they
fall back and spring forward. It just messes with people. And I like it to be dark about 9 o'clock in the summertime, not 10 o'clock in the summertime.
Correct.
So he gave me the lowdown. He said, you know, it actually was in committee a few years ago. There just wasn't enough momentum behind it to let it get out of committee to actually go to vote. And I said, well, what about an executive order? What about old Trump just throwing an executive order on? He does it for everything else. And Todd said, you know, that could happen. He could definitely do an executive order. And by the time that another president comes in 3.5 years later, people will have gotten used to it and probably forgot about it by then, and it wouldn't go back.
Hmm.
And I said, so how often do you talk to the president? And he said, well, I talk to him about every week and a half. I go, really? Well, would you mind mentioning to the president that we need to sign an executive order straight from the great state of Indiana to eliminate daylight savings time? He said, sure, I'll bring it up. And he said, but don't be surprised if he doesn't give you a call. And I said, I'll keep my phone on.
So that shows up on caller ID, that number. So
I don't know what the number is. I should have asked him. Hey, you just give me his digits. I'll just shoot him a quick text. But it was interesting because Todd said that that the president, all he does is talk on the phone. From the minute he gets up to the minute he goes to bed, he said, if I text him or call him, he will call and text me back as soon as possible.
Wow.
He said, quicker than his own chief of staff. And he said, I have a great chief of staff. So he said, he doesn't get buried in the details. He gave me a lot of insight on the way Trump governs and the way he operates, which is the way big businesses ran, you know, where you say, you handle that, you handle that, you handle that, and then you get back to, hey, how's that going? How's that going? Come on, come on, you can get that done.
Kind of like Coach Cignetti does.
Exactly,
well.
Exactly, and it works. So anyway, just I thought it was a pretty interesting conversation. We talked about Social Security. We talked about mortgages as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, hey, why can't we float a 45 or 50-year amortization loan out there for mortgages? People are still going to have an average duration of 7 to 12 years where they're either going to sell, refinance, or something, but it gets the payments back down, and interest rates don't matter. He goes, that's a great idea. And we talked about, because he didn't really get he was talking about the Fed, and I said, well, and this is a question here about this. The Fed's going to lower rates. It should help mortgages. I said, not necessarily, Todd. I said, that's not what drives mortgage rates. The market drives mortgage rates. It's the 10-year Treasury. It was kind of interesting that he didn't have a real good feel for that, but I guess you can't have a good feel for everything. Yeah. And that may be why we have conversations and why he reaches out to me. Or it could be that now he knows that financial advisors can donate money. Could be that one, too.
I'll leave that one alone.
All righty. How about we take a break and get to the Q&A, Jimmy? We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes is the question and answer show. If you have a question, always email us at cfci.us. And don't be surprised if I call you. All right, Jimmy, let's kick it
off. Right. Now, the first couple of these, I've got some basic details, but I think you know more about them. So you're going to have to fill in the blanks here. But the first one is about someone age 65, a bonus deduction phase out on a Roth conversion.
Yeah, so we're talking about the new senior bonus, right, deduction, that's what that's in reference to. So now if you're 65 years old in 2025, 26, 27, and 28, you're going to receive an extra $6,000 deduction, and that is the way that they covered the no tax on Social Security. That's on top of the $1,600 that you would get as well if you're married filing joint. And if you're married filing joint, you both get $1,600, that's $3,200. You both get $6,000, that's $12,000 on top of your normal standard deduction, which is going to be $31,000. That's a lot of deductions. So the question is, once you hit certain income levels, it starts to phase out. And that, for married filing joint, is 150 and singles 75. But it doesn't phase completely out until you hit 250,000 of income. So an unintended consequence of doing a big Roth conversion could be that you move into that phase out area, that 150 to 250 range. So you start kind of eliminating the power of your tax savings because you start reducing some of those bonus deductions. The goofy thing is none of this stuff lines up, right, with other things like Medicare surtax premiums or whatever. And that's what we talked about in the Big Beautiful Bill presentation on Wednesday night. We'll do again tomorrow night. You've got to watch a lot of balls in the air because, yep, we've got this one we need to watch out for. We have this one we need to watch out for, Medicare surtax. Oh, and by the way, we have net investment income tax as well once you hit over 250. So we have all these different numbers you have to keep track of. So when you do a big Roth conversion or a Roth conversion at all and you realize more income as a person 65 or older, you could eat into this big bonus deduction. You could trip into Medicare surtax. You could trip into net investment income tax. A lot to think about, Jimmy.
Next one is about Medicaid. I guess somebody was injured, a fundraiser, needing to protect money. What's the scoop on this one?
Yeah, I'm just helping a family out. So a young lady named Jamie was injured in a motorcycle accident, and we knew her originally because she worked down at the porthole, and she was a server and bartender, worked at Nick's. So she's just a great, great person. Mm-hmm. And so her family and friends and everybody, including the porthole, next Sunday, all profits are going to go to Jamie and her fund. We decided that we should protect the money and have it in some trust. So I got a hold of her family. I've talked to her dad. I've talked to her mom. I've talked to both of her brothers, usually 8:30 at night over the last few days, and trying to figure out, along with some help with attorney friends, what kind of trust do we need to set up so that it is protected in case she needs to go on Medicaid, you know, if her expenses get so high, and she's a server, right? So she lives on tips. And that's so if she's not working, she's not making money. So anyway, so we came up with a way that you can put money into it. There's certain trusts that need, handle differently. So this particular trust doesn't have a Medicaid recapture. Most trusts, if I put my own money into a trust and I go on Medicaid, which maybe you're trying to have nursing home protection, you know, assets and whatever, and then or your house or whatever, and then you die, Medicaid expects to be repaid with the money in that trust or the money that's from your home. But this particular trust, there is no Medicaid recapture, and the beneficiaries of the trust, of course, Jamie would be primary beneficiary, but then this contingent benefit, like if she died, then where does it go? It would then be distributed to her brothers or mom or dad or whoever it might be. So it's very complicated. I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving legal advice, but simply know enough to know that there are ways to do things, and there's a way to do things right and a way to do things wrong. Medicaid is a moving target.
Who establishes the types of trust? Is that a legal type thing? Like the attorney? Is that a bank? I mean, how you mentioned different types. There were so many.
Yeah, I mean, I would have an attorney do it because they know how to write it so that it's correct. It would be considered under the title of special needs trust, okay. But there are a variety of special needs trusts. I think this one was called something like third tier. I don't know. There was some goofy name for it that exactly described what she needed. So I just told them that I would take the, you know, because I would help get this done. And I've got most of the legwork done, and for hopefully tomorrow get them a rough draft, and they can look over the weekend and, you know, get the attorney to finalize it and be ready to receive funds, because hopefully next Sunday, and I know Nick's was, I think, planning to do something, and they have a GoFundMe page as well for her, that we can get this thing up running. And I told him I'd help him in any way I could.
Yep. You touched on this in the first segment, but with interest rates changing potentially in September, what should I be thinking about with any loans like that I have, such as my mortgage, credit card, anything that has a loan?
Well, this was Todd Young's. I mean, so our conversation. Oh. Yeah. So he said, well, you know, mortgage rates should come down. So not necessarily. So what the Fed controls is the overnight borrowing between banks or the discount window. If they want to go borrow from the Fed, that's all they're dealing with. So pretty much any short-term adjustable type loans will be affected. But anything with a fixed rate loan may not be, because the Treasury curve is what sets those. As an example, most of my commercial loans, actually almost all my commercial loans, are set to the 5-year Treasury. So back in 2020 and 2021, the borrowing was great because the 5-year Treasury was around, you know, 2 or something. And the banks would add 2 on top of that, and I borrowed at 4%. And guess what? Now, this year in 2025 and next year in 2026, all those wonderful, big, beautiful loans that I had are going to roll at the new 5-year Treasury, which is now going to put my rate up in the high 6s now. Mortgage rates, 30-year fixed mortgage rates, have always been priced off the 10-year Treasury. And why not the 30-year Treasury? Well, because most people do refinance, sell, move, whatever, somewhere in 7 to 12 years. So that's why it's 10-year. Well, the 10-years is based, that's based on growth, expectations of growth, and inflation. It doesn't really matter what the Fed's doing. Now, the Fed lowering rates could increase growth, which could increase inflation, which would actually increase rates, not lower rates long term.
Right.
So that's where Todd was having a hard time wrapping his head around it. I'm like, no, it's more market driven. He's like, okay, I get it. I said, that's why you throw an amortization from 30 years to 40, 45, or 50 and get a payment down to where an average person can still stay around that 30% debt to income ratio and get in the house, because that is the foundation for building wealth, is having a home. Because if you rent, I hate to say that, people rent for a lot of reasons, but most people aren't rich who rent.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I know the only people that I know that are rich, and rich is a subjective term, but, you know, that have some wealth, they own their home, you know? And a lot of them have been in their home for a really long time.
Right.
How long have you owned your home? You've been there a long time.
20 years next month.
Jimmy, yeah.
Crazy, but I can see the end.
Yeah, but see what I mean by... Can you imagine if you were renting still?
No.
At 48 years to 49 years old?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, rent was probably $400 a month when you bought this house, and now it's $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 a month.
Yeah, it's. I know my next-door neighbor pays in rent.
That's why, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a 40-year mortgage or 50-year mortgage or not. I mean, the payment is going to be the same. So that's making inflation work for you, not against you. So if you have a $500 house payment, I'm just making this up, and plus taxes and insurance, which have gone up, and 20 years later, you're still making the same payment, but rents have tripled or quadrupled, you made inflation work for you, not against you. So I have proposed this a couple times to legislators, Aaron Hauschen one, Todd Young now two. You know, and I think that it makes sense. So we'll see. We'll see. And I don't know. I think they listen, but whether they actually take it back and do anything with it, I do not know.
All right. You want to take a break, sir?
Sure. Let's do that. We'll be right back. We got a little ton, like 15, 16, 20. We'll never get to all these.
We won't.
We'll try our best. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes is going to try to look through these questions real quick because Jimmy will confirm that I have not seen any of these questions.
It's all right. Some of these you actually get submitted, so it's okay. But so next question here, when you talk about retirement, it typically sounds like somebody is completely stopping work. So this individual is planning to work as long as he can, not necessarily in a full-time role, but in some capacity. So is there anything that this gentleman might do to adjust his financial plan with the intent of continuing working as long as possible?
100%. So we have this happen more often than not. People who are, you know, in their young 60s or even 65 or even older say, I still want to do something. I want to drive a courtesy car for Royal or Curry or somebody, or I want to go work at Lowe's in the golf shop. All these are all true stories of clients of ours. Or I want to work down at Kleindorfer's in the hardware store. It's, you know, do something fun. You stay around people. You know, you make a little bit of money.
Yep.
So, you know, whenever we do planning, we assume you're going to stop working. So we say, okay, based on, you know, what you need or what you want, I'll make this up. You want, you know, $10,000 a month net spendable income. And between both your Social Securities, we've got four. So we need six more. So six more, then we're going to have this much money set aside for year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, you know, creating the buckets, and then the rest will be in growth. Well, if they come back and say, well, you know what, I think I'm going to do this, and they're going to pay me, you know, 20 grand a year. Oh, well, now we don't need, you know, six a month. You know, now we need, you know, like four a month.
Right.
So we then, not exactly four, 24,000. Now we need 4 months. So now we build four, we do that, and then we build it, gives you more growth opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you can work, even a little bit in retirement, it's incredibly beneficial. And we can illustrate that and show that in our financial planning system. So absolutely, you want to tweak your plan. And if you're not of full retirement age, 67 for most people, for Social Security, you have to keep an eye on the earnings limitations if you took Social Security early. 62, 63, 64. But if you took it to 67 and you're over 67, you can make all the money you want. It won't affect your Social Security.
Okay, very nice. We have a question from Sarah. Names have been changed to protect the innocent. I am 60 years old. My mom passed away 5 years ago in 2020, and I inherited an IRA from her. Now, my mom was of the age to take an RMD, a required minimum distribution. So Sarah's question is, does she need to take an RMD this year at the age of 60?
Mm-hmm.
And she's curious if she's messed something up. She says, I know there is something about 10 years, but I don't know if that relates to me, my mom's age, when she passed, et cetera. I know there's something about waivers as well, and didn't know if that changed when I started taking the money out or when it all had to be out.
Yeah, this was confusing as heck because 2020, we got all kinds of buys and punts in 2020 and 2021. So 2020, you know, the Secure Act 2 or Secure Act had passed, and they said, okay, no longer when you inherit a retirement account can you stretch it over your lifetime. You have to take a minimum distribution. If the person who owned it was taking minimum distributions, you have to have it all out in 10 years. But they said, hey, in 2020, you don't have to, because there was, like, back then a 50% penalty if you missed it. So it punted. So next year, it punted. And all of a sudden, we get to 2024, and like, wait a second, what's the deal with the IRAs that were inherited back in 2020? They finally came out and said, okay, you have to have it all out by 2030. And you need to start taking required minimum distributions. So here we are, 2025. You need to go ahead and take that RMD in 2025, and you have to have it all out by 2030. So, big surprise.
Okay. Question number eight, sir.
Oh, and the RMD is based on the beneficiary's life expectancy, not the previous owner's life expectancy.
Okay.
So if, with her being 60, you know, she let's say in 5 years, you know, she'll be 65. She may very well, and maybe I don't really know the situation, but she might be wanting to retire at 65. So take the absolute minimum for the next 4 years, and then that last year, take it all out when your income may be lower. So everybody's situation is different, but I don't know the situation in a lot of detail.
Okay. Skipping over question seven. I'll explain it later.
Okay.
So question eight, have a couple where the husband has recently passed away. He had a
Sarah
Roth,
again?
It is. Names to protect the innocent.
All right.
He had a Roth IRA that he had contributed to over the years.
Yep.
The wife is not yet 50. So her question is, if she cashed out that Roth IRA, what are the rules on this?
You know, it's sad that it has to be this complicated. So, you know, basically there's two things that you can do with any IRA as a spouse. Make it your own, and now it's my Roth IRA, or treat it as an inherited IRA, a spousal inherited IRA. Well, if she makes it her own IRA, then she's subject to all the same rules that her husband was, that the 59.5 thing comes into play. You know, the contributions could come out, you know, as long as she had for 5 years and all that. But if she makes it her own or an inherited IRA, then she can cash it all out immediately and distribute in her distribution. There'd be no penalty, nothing. So everything would be tax and penalty free if her husband had established the Roth IRA at least 5 years ago, and he had. And she makes it her, doesn't make it her own, but make it inherited, cash it out, she's good to go. But you have to know the steps. And that was a question that actually came from my brother Dan, and he popped it over to me, and I said, here's how it works. But the beautiful thing about being an Ed Slott Elite Advisor is that I have a back office of technicians that are the smartest in the world.
Yep.
And I just said, so I'm a trust but verify. I mean, it's like I know the answer, but I just want to make sure that it's right. It's kind of like using our good friend ChatGPT that we've become so reliant upon. The answers come through, and you can't always trust it.
Yep. Next question is from Mike. He's 48 years old. He has money in a previous 401k. If Mike withdraws a monthly amount to accelerate his house payment, does he have to be 55 years old to avoid the 10% penalty? So he's got 7 years before that age 55.
Yeah, so the rule of 55 is where this would apply. So he would have to have terminated in the year he turns 55 from the employer where he had the 401k. If that's the case, he can take penalty-free distributions from the 401k. You can't avoid the tax, but penalties you can avoid. If it was from an older 401k that he didn't terminate service from at 55, no, it has to be from that 401k. So the only thing that he could do maybe is roll, if he has a new 401k, roll that money into his new 401k, maybe take a loan of a $50,000 loan up to 50%, $50,000 max, use that to accelerate the house payments, and then pay himself back through payroll deductions. That would be probably the only end around, if that would even make sense or give him the opportunity to make a bigger dent into his mortgage.
Okay. You want to take a break? Because the next one's a little meaty here.
Yeah, why not? We'll take a break. Okay. We'll be right back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everybody. I want to jump in fast. We have more time. It is a beautiful Thursday in Bloomington. Kind of cloudy, kind of cool, but you know what? It feels like football weather, and like I said at the beginning, I am fired up about Saturday. I think the Hoosiers are favored by 22 or 23. If I was a betting man, and occasionally I do, I would put money on the Hoosiers because I don't think that they're going to come out and try to, you know, play their third string in the second half. I think they'll probably have the pedal on all the way through the end of the third, and then maybe do some substitutions in the fourth quarter. But my bet is that our second string is better than their first string. So I think we'll be – could we have some depth this year, something we've really not had much of for a really long time, actually never in my lifetime. So pretty excited about that. All right, Jimmy, fire away.
All right, have a question here about health savings accounts. If a person dies with an HSA balance, what happens to that money? Does it go just into the general estate? Is it taxable? Do you have to assign a beneficiary to an HSA? This comes from someone who has, as she said, a large balance in there. Don't know how much, but is curious what happens if she passes away.
People are so funny because I've had that so many times. People say, I just have way too much in savings. And I'll be like, well, how much? How much do you have in savings? Like $15,000. I go, you don't have too much in savings. But then you'll see some people say, I like to keep some people have hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings. So, yeah, I don't know how much she has either. But really the answer, just it depends. And I hate to say it that way, but it does. It depends who the beneficiary is. If the spouse is, then they can just treat it like their own, like the Roth IRA is that I talked about before. But if the beneficiary is a non-spouse, like kids, that's where it gets a little more complicated. Things get more complicated if your spouse is not your beneficiary. Or if you're single, right? Maybe your spouse is deceased, and now you want to name your kids as your HSA beneficiaries. Just be warned that non-spouse HSA beneficiaries do not fare very well. Here's how it works. The account value of your HSA account becomes taxable to your kids in the year of your death. So if it's a big balance, and I've seen HSAs, $80,000 to maybe, I don't know that I've ever even seen a $200,000, but remember with an HSA, the beauty of it was you get a deduction when it went in, it grows tax deferred, and comes out tax free for approved medical stuff. Now, a lot of stuff, almost everything. You can not only just pay for current expenses, but you can pay for expenses that you used to have as long as you were under an HSA. So there are no inherited HSA accounts. That means there's no stretch available, no 10-year rule, no nothing. So you really don't want to die with a big HSA. So my advice to you, use it. It's a triple threat of retirement income accounts. Again, deduction in, tax-free growth, tax-free out. Where else can you get that? Nowhere else but an HSA. In fact, when people say, should I fund my 401k or my HSA? HSA, all day long. I'd love for you to do both, but if you're trying to pick and choose where you can allocate your money, HSA, 100% all day long.
All right, so this next question is meaty. There's a few parts to it, but we got it covered here. So, and you were talking about the HSAs, about if you are not married, if you're single, distribution. So similar situation here. We have a woman who owned an IRA. She was single, passed away 2 years ago at the age of 74. Her sole beneficiary was her brother. He was 71 in that same year. So the brother was an eligible designated beneficiary, was taking RMDs over his life expectancy. Mm-hmm. That brother has passed away in this year. Okay. So the IRA is now going to another brother and a niece. The second brother, 75%, the niece, 25%. So the multi-part is, does brother number two and the niece now follow the 10-year rule? Do the annual RMDs of the brother and niece start next year? Annual RMD? Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of pieces with this.
I got it. So basically, there's a few cases where you are an eligible designated beneficiary. And all that really means is that you're eligible to do the old stretch rules where you could stretch it over your lifetime. One of them is the beneficiary less than 10 years younger? Well, in this case, the brother was. And I don't come across this very often, but the brother, and it's non-spouse, right? So it goes to the brother. So he's eligible for this traditional stretch. And he can take it over his lifetime just a little bit. But unfortunately, when the successor beneficiaries take over, they're back to the new rules, which is the 10-year rule. Yes, they have to start taking RMDs in 26. The 2026 to 2034 annual RMDs are the same as what the brother one would have been taking. That's what happens. I mean, you don't take your own life expectancy. You take the first brother's life expectancy. Keep taking it as he was, and every year you just kind of reduce the divisor by one. But it is complicated because don't forget, The Secure Act 2.0 said, we're no longer going to penalize missed RMDs by 50% because, number one, they never did it. They lowered it to 25%, which means they're going to enforce it. So you have to know the rules. You must take the correct required minimum distribution, whether it's your own or as an inherited person. to avoid getting penalized. 25%. So 20, that's a lot. 25% is a penalty. That's a lot. 50 was ridiculous. That's why no one ever paid it. But the IRS recognized it and said, okay, we'll lower it to 25, but now we're going to enforce it.
And then one more here. We talked, as you mentioned, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act presentation last night. Tonight, salt came up, not the stuff that you put on your food, but the state and local tax deduction. So this person's comfortable with the merit filing jointly salt if they have a adjusted gross income under a half million. The salt's 40, blah, 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 blah. So the question is for single filers. Are the adjusted gross income limits and SALT deductions the same as individuals who are filing jointly?
So the max is 20. So the one thing that made sense with this new tax law is things kind of made sense a little bit, because if it's married filing joint, it was 40. If you're single, it's 20. You know, if you are, if the limit to have the SALT deduction is a half a million dollars of modified adjusted gross income, it's 250 if you're single. Where that's not the case across a lot of our tax laws, where singles this and like the net investment income tax for singles 200, for married filing joint it's 250. Doesn't make any sense, but that's what it was back when we passed the Affordable Care Act, and that's what it's been since then.
Okay, we got time for one more here. Let's see. Let's skip to number 14. My uncle retired early. His company offered a package that he said was too good to pass up, although I don't know what the details are. So he's wondering, are there different things to consider for investing when you don't retire but are retired by your company?
Well, I mean, it again goes back to, when do you need your money? Are you, you're retired by your company. He wants to keep working. It sounds like he does. Yeah, I mean, it's again, going back to that earlier question, when someone wanted to retire but keep working, and this is the deal was too good to pass up. I've seen this happen with a lot of people at General Motors, AT&T, where they go back and work for their people, or they got a good offer from the government for an early buyout at Crane. Remember all those back in the Doge times? And they went back and worked for a contractor. So, yeah, I mean, it just kind of depends. Are you going to actually retire in from your job and go pick up something that's going to pay you less and you're going to need money? So it's all about the purpose of your investments, when you're going to need it, and that's how you build your buckets. And, I mean, there really isn't any better answer than that. We better take a break, okay, Jim.
Yep.
When we come back, we've got more questions. It looks like a 529 plan. Oh, my gosh, Jim, we got so many questions. It's ridiculous. But anyway, we'll cover as many as we can and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Going a little bit long today, but that's okay. About 6-7 minutes left, so we're going to squeeze in two more segments, this one and a quick outro. So, Jimmy, kick it off.
All right. And next month is College Savings Planning Month. September is. So, question about college savings. I'm considering an Indiana 529 college choice plan, but I've heard about UTMAs and UGMAs. So, what are the differences between these different types of accounts?
Yeah, pretty simple, really. The 529 college savings plan, you get a tax credit from the state of Indiana when you put in money, like up to $7,500. You get 20% back, or $7,000, I believe, 20% back on your state taxes. It's not a refundable credit, but it's a credit that goes against tax that you might owe. You know, and then it's supposed to be used for a variety of educational things, and they've expanded a lot of that under Secure Act 2.0. If a beneficiary's been around for 20 years and there's money left over in the plan, you can roll $35,000 into a Roth. The Unified Gift to Minor account, or a Unified Transfer to Minor account, that's the UGMA and the UTMA, those are both custodial accounts, meaning adults can transfer cash or investments to a child. It allows for the transfer of real estate. They can be held in pretty much every state. At the point they reach certain ages, it's either 18 or 21, kind of depending on the state, then it's theirs. Unlike a 529 plan where it's yours, you own it, or your son owns it, or your dad owns it, or whoever owns it, and the child, or doesn't have to be a child, is the beneficiary. So we see these sometimes being the whenever someone inherits money as a minor, and there's not a lot of money, so you don't need a big fancy trust, kind of more of a simple trust. You can have a unified transfer to minor account or a unified gift to minor account. They really are treated very much the same way.
All right, another question here. This was a very curveball here, but we heard about this one. Somebody wanted to pay off a loan that the synagogue that he belonged to to a third party, replace it with a loan to him. So the loan was handled by an attorney, but when the gentleman went to take the money out, he took the money out of his IRA instead of a brokerage account. So what happened? The withdrawal was over $500,000 in 2024. His accountant, I guess, didn't discover this until filing the taxes this year. So trying to figure out if there is a way to correct this error. $500,000 here.
What number is that? I'm trying
that
to
is number 13, sir.
13.
Sorry about that. I should have given you that
That's
one.
Okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, you know.
A little practice here.
Well, that's complicated. So,
yeah.
Gosh. Okay. Well, the only thing, I mean, there's always seems to be, almost always, some kind of a possible option. The only thing I can think of is what they call a late rollover, and it, there's a code, I can't, it's RP something, but it allows, it gives you reasons for the late rollover, which means, you know, take it back and put it back. A lot of it's like serious illness, death, close family member, you know, has passed away, a house has been damaged by a catastrophe, you know, so I've seen that a few times where, you know, the rollover is, you know, 10 months, a year, even later. But they can try it. I can't say they won't be denied.
Yeah.
Rough so anyway, situations. My guess is they're probably, they're out of luck.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
All right, Jimmy, do it.
All right. Now you got to make it look, looking for the last one.
Let's
here.
Do a happy one.
Not,
no. No lawsuits. No. What else here?
Oh, my gosh. Let me
you already
see.
Did 55.
That one we did. That one we did. David, we may have covered all of them, actually, that aren't too and meaty.
Yeah,
or
we don't
I think
that.
We have.
We don't want to do that. Hey, we're not going to be taping the Big Beautiful Bill presentation, are we?
No.
Okay.
Wasn't planning on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we'll lay it out there to everybody. If you think, if you're listening, that, hey, I would really like to come and hear what you have to say about the current fiscal health of the United States of America, how we will be paying for the $37 trillion and projected maybe, you know, 40 to 41 or 42 trillion over the next 10 years and possibly $50 trillion, will lower tax rates and tariffs actually bring more money in while we cut spending to keep them from attacking our IRAs and 401ks? Will there be other ways that the revenue can be increased through maybe federal estate taxes changes or something like that? Maybe stepped up cost basis. We covered a lot of material in 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty proud of that, Jimmy. We stopped 1 hour.
It was. Yep, on the money.
In fact, I had told my wife to be there at 6:30. I said 7:30, but I meant 6:30. And I walked downstairs at the country club. She was, of course, talking to people in the parking lot. So I was able to sit down, have a nice glass of wine, had a, what did I have to eat last night? Whatever it was weird. Oh, it was a barbecue cheeseburger pizza.
Hmm.
Yeah. It was. Okay. They put, like, brown mustard on top of it, and it sounded good in the description. I thought, I'll try this. Well, I ate, like, two pieces of it. And I'm like, give me some of your grilled chicken. All right, we'll take a break, come back, and wrap this show up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone, Labor Day weekend. I'm so excited, and we'll get to hear Glass in the afternoon on Friday. Always look forward to that. He's got the tailgate show, he and Joe, around 12:30.
Yep.
That'll be a lot of fun. You can always hear this show again on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., maybe on your way out to Memorial Stadium. Catch Joe and Glass on the tailgate. Kick off 2:30 in Memorial Stadium, and I've been told by insiders that the athletic department have your butt in your seat by 2 p.m. because that's when the show starts, because the Bison will be revealed with the Hoosier 100 is what I've been told. So very exciting.
Yep,
time.
Be
weather's
awesome.
Supposed to be great. Bloomington Speedway on Friday night. We're going to do we're going to sponsor a night again. We're not doing anything except giving free admission.
Yep.
To 200 of our clients, limited to six per family.
Mm-hmm.
And last time we did this, we sold out in 2 days. So Jimmy's going to be putting that out here in just a little
bit.
While to our clients. So if you're listening, and a lot of you do, Friday will be the pickup at our office in person from 8 until 4 p.m. 4 p.m. on Fridays?
3:30 to get the tickets because we close at 4.
Gotcha. Perfect. Yeah, that's a great idea because the gates open at 5.
There you go.
All right, cool. All right, Jimmy, got anything else?
That's it.
Let's wrap it up. Have a great weekend, everyone. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.